Okay, so Zvi, who has now disappeared again, asked me last night to try and say some things at the beginning about what we actually do for the non-experts. So I'll try and work some of that in. So I'll start by introducing why we want to do all of this. And then I'll go on and talk about how far we've actually got, and then what we're currently working on and what still needs to do, and then I'll present some conclusions. I work out how to get this to go. Okay. So before I actually go in, I'll talk about the details of the physics in a minute. So Fortran-Heuring event generator has been a very successful simulation program. It's been expanded and improved for about 20 years now. And this graph is designed to show the level of expansion that we have. So this solid line is the number of lines of code in the program. So it started off down here in 1986 with about 4,000 or 5,000 lines of code, and as of the last edition it was 60,000 lines of code, right? So this has grown by a huge factor, and the number of authors has gone up in some similar way. And basically the structure of the code was collapsing under the weight of having hacked it and expanded it.
60,000 authors, or
that's 60,000 lines of code. If we had 60,000 authors, we probably wouldn't have a problem, unless they were like Atlas and none of them did anything. So the structure was basically groaning under the weight of all this hacking that had gone on for all this time, and many of the physics improvements and changes that we wanted to make were just impossible to make because of the structure. They were possible, but it would have required an incredible amount of work. And maintenance was becoming much harder, so any little change you made had unforeseen side effects, and the whole thing was becoming unstable. So about 3 or 4 years ago, we took the decision to produce a new program using much of the same philosophy for the physics and many of the same physics ideas, but where we could, making improvements to give better results. Then following that, the choice was made to rewrite the thing in C++, and this was basically based on the experimental decision that they were all going to use C++, which now seems to be something that many of them are regretting, but it's something that we're left with. Which one of these do I need to...
Did you get
doing something. Okay. So a very early stage of this project, we made a decision to use the same structure for the code as Pythia 7, which Torbjörn will talk about after me. And that, in principle, has a lot of advantages. So the first one was that we didn't have to spend the 3 or 4 years that Leif seems to have done designing the structure. And we could actually get on and code some physics at an earlier stage of the project. And also, it should allow Heuring and Pythia physics pieces to be used together, so that you could run, say, the Heuring hadronization model and the Pythia shower, or vice versa, so that you've got a better handle on the uncertainties in the whole thing. So the common infrastructure pieces have evolved into something that's called the Toolkit for High Energy Physics Event Generation, which is the PEG, and Toby may say more about that. So that structure then should allow other people who are not authors of these programs to write pieces. So if they have some idea for a new part on shower or something, they can just write that piece in this structure and everything should work. So that's the principle. Now, if one of my C++ colleagues were giving this talk, you would now get lots of these bubble diagrams with lines all over the place and see lots of class structures, which is, I think, one step above showing Fortran common blocks, but it's not a very big... No, this one. Okay, it's not a very big step above showing common blocks. So I'm not going to do that. So I will actually discuss the physics that's got inside here. I think before I do that, it's useful to recall the general features of the physics inside the event generation process. And this is when I realized this whole thing is going to fall down, as the next slide should probably be seen the other way up. Never mind. So all the event generators split the process up into a number of phases. This next slide is supposed to show them, and I suspect this was when I was doing transparencies, so never mind, we'll have to read it wrong way up. Sorry about this. With transparencies, it's easy, you just rotate the transparency. So what we always do with these things is we start with some hardcore process, which here is, for example, quark anti-quark annihilation via a gluon. to produce a TT bar pair. And that would be the hard core of the process, and that's when we'd start, where we'd start. We'd then have to generate perturbative QCD radiation from that process, and we'd do that in what we call the initial of the final state shower. So there would be the initial state evolution would start at the hard scale of this process and would evolve backwards down in energy scale, emitting quarks and gluons to some low energy scale typical of the incoming hadron, so of order of GeV, say. And equally, for final state colored particles, there'd be outgoing radiation, which would start at the hard scale of the process and go down to the scale of order lambda QCD of order of GeV or so, where we would then stop this perturbative QCD evolution because we could no longer go and do perturbative QCD evolution, and we resort to some non-perturbative hadronization model, which is meant to be illustrated by these blobs that would turn the quarks and gluons of this perturbative phase into the hadrons, the observed hadrons that will interact with the detector. So those are the main steps of this. In hadron-hadron collisions, there are other complications because you want to have some interaction of the beam remnants, be that multiple scattering effects to generate an underlying event in the structure, or perhaps some soft model of the underlying event. And also in processes where there are heavy particles, those heavy particles have to be decayed. So for example, the top quark would decay to a W and a bottom, and then you would have QCD radiation from the decaying particle. It's decay products, and then all of this stuff would have to be hadronized. Then finally, the hadrons produced by the hadronization model are often unstable, and you've then got to go on and decay those into the stable hadrons that will interact with the detector, pions, protons, neutrons, etc. Okay, is that enough? I'll see more of you. I will see more about the physics as I go on. Okay, so I'm going to start by discussing the major pieces of physics which are currently implemented in Herwig++. So the two bits that are actually done, the parton shower and the hadronization, which form the core of this. And I think these illustrate the two types of improvement that we've hoped to make with the simulation and recorded. So for the parton shower, we've adopted a new evolution variable that was to improve the simulation. So the evolution variable still has what we call coherence effects, which were very important in our Fortran simulation, and which we have a philosophical belief at some level that have to be there. And the physics supports that. But then we've changed things to get some other effects better. So this is some sort of fairly major change. Whereas for the hadronization model, we made some more minor changes to improve some of its properties, to improve its agreement with data. And those are the two sort of things we want to do. Minor change, some major changes, but some less minor change. Okay. So for the parton shower, in the Fortran program, the parton shower was based by on angular ordering. And given that we have got the non-experts, I should say what I mean by that. Can you see? So what we're doing in this thing is we're doing some sort of D-glap evolution. We've got an incoming quark, say it radiates a gluon, and they keep radiating. And if this was, say, E plus E minus to QQ bar, right, you could go on and do this D-gap evolution, and that would be the leading collinear logarithms. And what was shown was that you could also be some the leading soft logarithms by, instead of ordering in terms of something like a virtuality, you could instead order in something in terms of an angle. So you start the evolution at some large angle, and all the subsequent submissions evolve down an angle. And the initial starting angle is then related to the color flow in the process. So for example, in this process, the color line of the quark would be connected to the anti-color line of the anti-quark, and the quark could only radiate up to the direction of the anti-quark, which would be the initial condition. Obviously, in E plus E minus, that doesn't really matter because they'd be back to back, and that would be the entire angular region. Okay, so these angular ordered effects then take into account the leading soft logarithm as well.
So this reordering guarantees you
It guarantees the way that we do it, I think, would guarantee that you get the double log, and it guarantees you get part of the single soft log, but the coefficient's not quite right. It's
there is no doubt that it would get part of the soft log. Is it an essential part of the word? In which sense is it? is an essential
single. Right. Yes. So we get part of that, but not all.
There is no parameter.
No, no, no.
There is no parameter. It distinguishes the ones which are single.
So I could, I can say something about this. So basically what we do, we take the equal Kevin distribution, we split it up, and then we average over the answer. Yes, so if you start with the equal Kevin, you can split it up into a piece. Let's take this example. You can split it up into a piece that's radiation from the quark and a piece that's radiation from the anti-quark in some way. Then if you azimuthally integrate that thing, then it's such that after you do the azimuthal integral, it's zero outside the cone that's given by the direction of this particle. So that's the piece that we're neglecting. We're neglecting emission outside that cone. Right? So the term of the soft log is not entirely correct because of that, but a large amount of it is, and inside the cone it is taken into account by this. Does that help? Right, so if you've got more at tenor, it then becomes a correct leading NC. Right, you lose some terms of order 1 over NC squared as well.
So you can have in more complex topology, you can have radiation outside the cone, but it just is suppressed by a smaller color charge. Right?
Right.
But you also have it at leading order
when one
squared.
Yeah. It's just gone to sleep. Okay. So we can discuss this if you want, but so there's some level of approximation that the single soft log is there. It's not the best we were able to do. Okay. So that evolved our ordering in doing the evolution in this variable, which is an energy squared times 1 minus the cosine. So in the small angle limit, this goes like the angle squared. It also went together with what we call the dead cone effect for heavy particles, where radiation in a direction of angle theta is less than the mass over the energy about the direction of the particle is suppressed, and that was suppressed by a step function. And depending on the mass of the particle and things, that step function is not a good approximation to what this distribution actually looks like. The algorithm is not Lorentz invariant. As I said, the implementation of this dead cone was rather drastic. So it led to one of Michelangelo's and Joy's CDF colleagues wanted to look for something they called the halo effect in TT bar collisions, where you saw a circular halo of radiation about the top direction. And that was not a physics feature, that was a feature of the fact that this approximation was way too drastic. So the idea for the C++ shower was to use recent ideas that came from massive dipole subtraction techniques and quasi-collinear splitting to produce a shower that had better Lorentz properties and mass effects while still retaining these coherence effects that we felt were important. So just to illustrate what I mean by that. So in the Fortran, you adopted a standard D-clap type theory. We had an n particle event. We radiated an extra particle. And the n plus one thing was the n particle cross-section subangular integral and the integral over the momentum fraction of the Altomelli-Parisi splitting function. So in the C++, we adopted a definition for the quasi-collinear limit that the momentum of the outgoing particles were defined in terms of the on-shell mass momentum of this incoming particle, the momentum fraction, these coefficients, which are designed to make sure these things are on mass shell, and then these light-lag vectors n and a perpendicular momentum. And that means that all of these momenta are on mass shell, and this is related to the massive dipole technique type papers. And the Sudakovsky. N is a massless light-like vector that's defined to have some properties. I think it's okay. Back? Okay. And using those techniques, you get a massive splitting function that's got some first piece which is the Deagle absolutely function that we're all familiar with, and then some mass-dependent piece. And we also then go for some evolution variable, is the virtual mass squared over z squared 1 minus z squared, and then there's some mass-dependent piece. And because of that, this actually allows us to evolve the thing down to 0 pt, which we couldn't in the Fortran, so that we can actually have a inhibition at 0 pt in the direction of the massive particle, so that we don't have to adopt this drastic dead cone prescription. We can have some emission inside that the dead cone region that is needed. And in terms of those variables, switch it up. Alpha S would be basically PT of the branching. So it's some form in terms of this, which is... it's some relation on this that would be such that it would go down to the mat.
Maybe S squared plus PT
squared. So something of that form. I forget what the exact form is off the top of my head. Yeah, so in Fortran code, this term wasn't here and this term wasn't here. No. The formalism is a lot more limited.
It's
agreeing
on for the boosts along the
S. Yes.
Yeah.
It's only boosted varied. Some events it varies is better than none. Okay. And it gives better phase space coverage. So this is an example of E plus E minus to quark anti-quark gluon at LEP energies for bottom quarks. And what you see here, there's three regions on this plot. There's one that would be a radiation off, I'll probably get this wrong, there'll be one that's radiation off the quark, one that's radiation off the anti-quark, and then because in these angular ordering approaches, we always have this thing that we call the dead zone, where there is actually no radiation generated. So this would correspond to hard emission, and we don't generate those hard emissions. And this is a symmetric case, and the key difference to the Fortran, which I haven't gotten here, in the Fortran, this point here is the soft singularity. In the Fortran, there would be some region here which was populated by emission from both the quark and the anti-quark, whereas that's no longer true, and the soft singularity is fully covered, which is guaranteed by the fact that these things meet tangentially as they tend towards the origin here. Also, in this new formalism, you can change the initial conditions a bit, and so here's an example where the conditions have been changed so that most of the emission actually comes from the quark, a little bit comes from the anti-quark, and it shrinks the size of the dead regions at the price of this asymmetrical emission. So it gives us a bit more freedom to play with.
So actually, I'm confused. So this is the better phase space coverage and the C++?
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a dead cone there.
Right. So there would still be a dead cone in the Fortran. The problem in the Fortran was that in addition to the dead cone, there was a doubly populated region here, which made applying corrections tricky. Sorry, it's the dead zone. Yeah, it's the difference between cone and zone.
So it's a dead zone in Herwig. In reality, it's not dead, right? It's just.
No, so this would correspond to hard emission, right? This is the hard emission piece that's missing.
That's filled in by the hard emission correction.
Right, so this would be filled in by the hard emission correction, or also you can fill a lot of it in by tweaking the initial conditions in this new approach. In practice, we went with this in a hard correction.
So what does that bottom plot correspond to again?
So if you saw that previous plot, I had these variables beta, and if you tweak, you have some freedom in how you choose them. And depending on how you choose them, you get more emission from the quark or the anti-quark. So this is a symmetrical choice.
So how about,
It may be akin to, this is from the Surikov decomposition of the momenta, it really probably is related to a gauge choice. Yeah.
And is that a user variable, or is that just something that's
I don't know whether the user has control of that. I jolly well hope not, Joey.
Is that just one of the things that you refuse to do in the future?
Yeah.
Well,
I think the yes, no.
radiation for one quality of radiation, the second wave of interference terms, and choosing the gauge, you can differ the distribute between these.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's no indication of density there, so maybe that's
Not so disturbing. Yeah. Yeah. So given the formulas are only really correct in the collinear and the soft pieces, provided that these two are the same in that, then it doesn't. What you do in this piece is subleading.
Do you already have a matrix element correction yet?
After all, you can average by.
Yeah.
And then the Monte Carlo things you are.
Yeah, so the matrix element correction is a hell of a lot easier to work out for this case than for that case.
You already had it worked out for the Fortran case, so.
Right, but the Fortran case would look more like this in that it was symmetric. So the matrix element exists and is applied for this case, but we can't apply it. We haven't worked it out for this case. So this is the one that's actually used in practice. So the other point is that in Fortran, the parameter that was used as the infrared cutoff in the Sudikoffs for the shower was the same as our fictitious gluon mass, which is an important parameter in our hadronization model. And that meant that the gluons at the end of the shower had to have this mass. You couldn't run the shower by setting this mass parameter to zero, otherwise the whole thing would blow up. So in C++, we doubled the number of parameters to control this, and the one that controls the cutoff in the shower and the one that actually is the mass that the outgoing particles have is different, and that means that we can produce zero mass gluons so that they could, for example, be fed into the Lund string hadronization model rather than the cluster model. So this is the idea that you should be able, in principle, interchange physics models between these programs.
So is that the only thing it takes, just zero mass gluons?
The whole thing would have to be retuned, right? It would be nonsensical if you didn't retune the string model and the parameters of the shower and everything together. But that was the that was the big technical problem, apart from obviously the fact that we're two entirely separate Fortran programs.
So it depends on where the cutoff for the shower is too, right? That's the tuning.
Yeah, but
I could think that kind of Bethia will, or string fragmentation will handle massive gluons.
Okay.
So the piece that's really the problem is that you have this gluon going to QQ bar branchings that force the production of clusters. Then Campbell, Fizia does have a treatment also if you happen to have a low mass string, but it's not so sophisticated, so you don't want it to happen all the time. So you want to have long strings. I think that's the main.
So that was always hidden in the hadronization model, or it has been for some time hidden in the hadronization model.
Has it been easy for you to kind of switch off the Lundian to keep the bar and just.
Well, that's as long as I can remember, has been the first step of the hadronization model. Okay. So if you didn't run the hadronization, that wouldn't have happened. But anyway. There's another cutoff that is basically there's basically two parameters for this old one. One of which is the cutoff in the shower for all of those things, and one of them is the physical mass that the gluon's given at the end. Right, and they can now be set different. So it's.
Before you would say after your Sudikoff, you say, okay, this part doesn't shower anymore, and you put it on the fictitious gluon mass shell. Now he has the option that can go on the real mass shell, even though the determinant of the shell.
Okay. Now, I could show you hundreds of these plots, and it would also.
So I'm sorry, now, what was the statement that in the new version, the C++, you can add, you can rebuild the cluster if you want.
In principle, that should be possible, yes. Well, in practice, I keep telling my colleagues who are actually doing this that they should have tested that it actually works, but in practice, I don't know whether it's actually.
And nobody tried it.
Yeah, it's one of these statements, in principle, this should happen. I don't dare. Some parameters I can probably switch. So these are the typical LEP of N-shaped type plots, and I'm only going to show.
Somebody's going to have a question for the cluster. You made some improvement also in the cluster.
I'm coming to the cluster next. So here are some typical LEP type of N-shapes. This is 1 minus the thrust, and it looks okay. And this is the major and the minor distributions, which are the directions along transverse directions to the thrust. I don't know what to say about them. You can show. We spent weeks looking at various different plots like this, all right? Just to show that it exists and it does produce plots of that nature. One important thing is that because we've had these better, hopefully better mass effects, we hope the heavy quark fragmentation function that it gave should be better. So the points on here are the measured values from SLD, and the lines on here are the results of the new program for different values of this parameter delta, which controls how near the edge of the phase space the shower can actually populate. Okay, and in practice you can get a reasonable agreement with that distribution, at least better than the Fortran was giving, as it wasn't doing very well. The problem is, even though we've improved the perturbative treatment of this, it turns out that the non-perturbative effects shift this distribution all over the place, and therefore there's a large amount of non-perturbative physics in there. Okay. The cluster. So as Toby said, the first step of the hadronization is this isotropic gluon decay into a quark-antiquark pair. That leaves a set of color singlet clusters which have a universal mass spectrum. I'm afraid this plot came out of the Fortran program. So the spectrum has this sort of form. So in the Fortran, we had problems where if you added new resonances, then it had implications for the multiplicities of lower mass states with the same flavor content. So if you added some new U bar D resonance, you could affect the multiplicity of pi minus. Even in the mass region where this new resonance couldn't even be produced, and that was felt to be a bad effect. The low momentum distribution, pi distribution, should not be affected if I had a new 2GeV resonance or something. So changes were made so that that no longer happens, and the thing is stable regardless of how many new particles you add, and it conserves isospin.
That part was what we were discussing last night. That curve is universal, so it doesn't matter if you running MC at MLO or what energy you're running at, you should always get a cluster distribution that looks like that.
Right, so this is varying the energy. I can't even read this.
Oh, that's not true?
Well, I mean, what happens with the beam remnants? I think you have problems.
The beam remnant distribution would look different to this. I don't know whether that would look universal off the top of my head. I haven't looked at that one.
So it looks different from what?
From this one. So This is like quarks. So, for example, the B cluster distribution would have a much higher, would have the same structure, but it would be further up because it's got a heavy quark in it. The beam remnant distribution would have a slightly different shape and be further up because it would often have a diquark in it. Right? It would be a heavier distribution simply because it's got heavier particles.
And how is this mass spectrum?
So if I split all the gluons to QQ bar pairs at the end of the shower and plot the mass distribution of the color connected pairs, this is the out of the program. This is the distribution I get.
But it's a function of the shower cutoff you're using. I
mean, right.
If I push the shower further down, the mass is going to split.
This is a property of the perturbative.
Yes, it's a perturbative property of the shower.
Well, the question we were discussing yesterday is, for example, if you start to do the next beam for the direction to high cross section. Should you sort of go back and repeat this thing, repeat your hadronization model, or is completely decoupled from energy?
You would hope it was completely decoupled. Whether in practice that's true or not is another question, but you would hope if you added this thing evolves down to some low scale.
Stefano Fixon and Ryan did, they use the same
cluster. Right. Yeah.
But is this absolutely correct, or is it something you hope to be correct?
So it's something I would strongly hope and believe to be correct, but I don't know that we've actually got those things.
But Peter, I think you know a little bit better. If you do merge with the merging, you would have to retune your fragmentation parameters. So if you believe that merging matrix elements into it kind of changes the initial conditions for the shower a little bit.
Right. So there's a difference between going down to 6 and adding 1. If I added 1, then I would hope that 1 extra hard emission wouldn't really affect it. It would all radiate down. If I start adding 6 very low ones and not allowing much emission from it, then that would be a different kettle of fish. So,
but I mean, you should also keep in mind that the parameters here would be determined, say, from mean plus and minus going to left. So assuming that you did a decent job of simulating hard radiation there, then of course once you go on to another set of processes, then you should not have to retune for that set of processes.
Absolutely. I just want to make the point that you should be sure that you tune your heterogenization parameters with a, say, specific setup of your code, so allowing enough hard radiation, etc.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, the heterogenization would try to live up for deficiencies in the shower.
So this means that this is not the thing which completely decouples the rest of the code.
No, no.
Whatever I do is the rest of the code, I have to change it.
Yeah. Okay.
So may I ask you another?
Right, go on.
If you retune the parameters, then take the lab data and check as you again.
Right, so the parameters were not tuned at the level that the lab collaborations tuned them, simply because tuning all of these parameters is an art form. It's not a science, it's an art form, and you need one of the experts, and we don't have that. So we did some minor tuning to get reasonable level of agreement, but they're not tuned at the level they were for lab. So this is one of these horrible tables. So here are particle multiplicities. Let me get this right. This is the answer the Fortran gave, and this is the final answer that the C++ gave. And the key point on these plots is almost the number of stars in the column, which is the number of things that are off by more than 3 sigma. And the number of things that are off by more than 3 sigma has actually gone down. Okay, some of them are always off by more than 3 sigma. Could be if even lambda's not off by more than 3 sigma. That does shock me.
In the cluster spectrum, you apply, in the old version, at least some cutoff when you have a heavy cluster and you decay it into
smaller. Right, that's before that's happened. That spectrum I showed you was before that happened.
Have you made any changes to that?
No, that's pretty much the same as it was.
Another question, if you put improvement on the shard, then you can decrease the Q0, a bit lower value.
Could you repeat?
In principle, you would like to put the cutoff as low as possible.
Well,
depends on what
if you put it too low, you'll get more.
Too low, of course. I mean, but you would like to have a, I don't know the.
It depends on how far do you trust perturbative QCD, and when do you think do say phenomenological models have better features?
Yeah. So it was already at about 0.75 GeV. I wouldn't really want to push it much lower than that, right? Okay. So I don't think we could learn anything by particularly studying the details of which ones are right, which ones are wrong. Okay, so I think the existing level has pretty much the same level of sophistication for the simulation of E plus E minus events that the Fortran did. We're now ongoing with the work that add the additional features you need for Hadron-Hadron collisions and replace some parts of the code which were simply copied from the Fortran. Okay, so that mainly involves two areas, a number of areas. So obviously, for Hadron-Hadron collisions, you need initial state radiation. You need underlying event modeling. For some things like TOP, you need radiation in particle, heavy particle decays, which isn't done yet. I'm interested in correlation effects. And the hadron decays that are in it at the moment were the bit that was simply copied from the Fortran. And they were bad in the Fortran, and that means they're still bad in the C++. Oops. Did that skip two there? Okay, so I've said this. So basically, it means implementing the initial state shower using the new evolution variables that we had for the final state shower. We also need to model the underlying event, and the first bit is a bit embarrassing. So we've always used as our default this underlying event model that was basically a fit to the UA5 data. So this is a very old experiment. It's a very old model. It's just a phase-space soft interaction model. And we've decided that that will actually be translated into C++ just to give a simple model that will actually work as something to start with. And then we will go on and include a multiple interaction model based on the ideas that were in Jimmy and developments by Mike Seymour and Ivan Borizan that followed from that. So I think Peter will talk more about and Rick will talk more about underlying events and things like that next week. So I won't say anything about that. Jimmy is just a multiple interaction model for the underlying event. Radiation in particle decays. So In the Fortran program, we treated the radiation from the particular decay of heavy particles separately. That's about the only thing we can do. The radiation from the decay itself was simulated in the rest frame of the decaying particle and did not cover the full soft phase space. So the part of the soft phase space was not covered, and that turned out to be a problem. I'll explain what I mean by that when I've got a plot that follows. So in C++, we intend to use this idea of a multi-scale shower. And the idea of this, that if, for example, we produced a top quark, there would be three stages for the radiation. There'd be radiation from the production in the production stage of the top quark up to a scale of order its width. And that would stop the shower at the scale of its width. Then there'd be radiation in the decay of the top quark up to the top quark width again. And the first one would use the color flows from the production, and this would use the color flows in the decay. And then finally, there'd be radiation from the decay products using the dipole between, say, the top and the anti-top, if you're doing a TT bar event, between the two bottom quarks, between the top width and the cutoff. Now, in principle, this is a better way of doing this. In practice, however, given the top width is about 1.2 GeV or so, 1.4 GeV, something like that, given the actual mass of the top and the cutoffs of order 0.75 GeV, there's not a lot of space between the two for radiation anyway. So for top, it's probably not important, but for heavier particles in new physics models, it may be relevant. Yes, Joey.
So did I show you that analysis that somebody's doing in CDF looking for radiation from top quarks?
No.
Actually, he's seeing something. I know, I mean, whatever. His ultimate idea, what he was thinking of, is just trying to look for the width of the top quark by, sort of comparing the radiation patterns to her week. But he actually, seeing something sort of unusual on run one, which is just that he's seeing more radiation whenever the color line isn't bent, from comparing to when it is bent.
Okay. So I need to think about that.
All right.
Okay, so using the new variables, in addition to radiation from the bottom, in the top decay, for example, there was only radiation from the outgoing bottom quark. In the new approach, there will also be radiation from the top quark in the decay process, and that means that the full soft phase space, so the soft point of the phase space lies at this top corner. And basically, previously, there was some region approaching this that wasn't covered, whereas here, these two lines are actually tangential and the whole phase space and the soft piece is covered, and you get these new regions that are radiation off the top, and you fill more of the phase space. But also, because this soft singularity is covered, it will mean applying the matrix element correction should be much easier than the previous case where it wasn't covered. Okay, so correlations. In the Fortran simulation, we had correlations due to spin effects inside the Fortran shower, and correlations between the production and the decay of heavy particles. And we couldn't combine the two effects together, so have correlations if the decay with the shower, because the structure of the code just didn't allow it. So in C++, we hope to combine those to have full correlations in the perturbative phase of the event. Where are we? Okay. And hadronic decays. So in Fortran and in the C++, we only have a very small number of hadronic matrix elements included, and phase space is used for the rest of the decay. So the same algorithm that we've always used for correlations in the perturbative phase of the event can be used for hadronic decays, and it's used, for example, same approach is used in Barbar's Monte Carlo, which I've spelled incorrectly, event generator EVT gem. So the plan is to include some of the more important decay matrix elements inside the structure, for example, tau decays, and then interface to this thing for the rest, at least as a first step. And then we can replace the bits of that we don't think are any good as time goes on, and we actually find some time. And here's some progress that was actually made last week while I was here. So this is the first actual result from having some correlations. So this is the decay of Higgs to a tau plus tau minus pair, followed by the tau decay to a pion and a neutrino. And this is the angle between the decay planes for either a scalar or a pseudoscalar Higgs. And this is just to show that the correlation exists, right? If there was no correlation effect in there, this thing would be a flat line. So we are making progress.
So
work goes on.
I guess there was going to be an interchangeable module that you could change the decayer. But you're telling me also that I'll be able to change the program that decays specific types of particles.
Yes. So let's say you you were a Tauler author and you wanted to go and rewrite Tauler in C++ in the structure tomorrow, then that would fit in some way. Yes.
But preserving everything else for all the other particles.
Yeah, or any other particle, yeah. So you can just add a part on shower bit or a decay bit or a hard matrix element bit in principle. Okay, so I think the E plus E minus is there. We're working on the features that we need for hadron-hadron collisions. I said here, hopefully, that will be available at least for some simple hadron-hadron processes by the end of the year. Following that, we then need to think about other things. So we had a lot of talk about CKKW yesterday, NC8NLO++ or whatever. The question, Pino reads the question of... seems very important in C++ that you put the ++ at the end of the title for some reason. Large angle soft emission is beyond the standard model physics. Hadron decays, you could write an almost endless list down there. However, as you saw, there's not that many of us, and therefore, while any individual thing can be done, there's a limit to how many of these things can be done. It's a very manpower short effort. Right, that's all I wanted to say.
I mean, is there any thought that's been given so far to how MC and NLO is going to interface to this?
And all right, so they would have to work it all out again, right? Because it depends on the details of the shell. So it would all have to be worked out again, and then you would have to write the thing in C++.
So it sounds like it's probably not going to be done, right?
Well, like I said, right? if we threw enough manpower at the project, we could do everything on this list and get everything done, right? With the manpower that we've got available, we've got to concentrate on what we can do. And that may not be the most important things that you think are most important. It may be the things that I feel I can be bothered to code up, right? And I'm interested in.
I mean, it's just my impression that's man years, right, to do that.
Yes. Right. We are talking, for a lot of these things, we are talking man years of effort.
People years.
Well, unless we get some different people, it's man years.
So that's your problem. You haven't looked for enough for female authors.
Given the trouble we've just had employing anybody, Joanne.
Probably won't be done, right? Because it's probably not needed at the level of, you know, doing physics.
So at the moment, we have some list, and we are going to work down that in order of priority. And given the last set of experimental demands we had from Atlas and CMS were not well focused, we have determined the priorities. Right. And maybe that some things get put in that you think have no priority. I'm interested in BSM physics, so that will probably go in. You may not think that has any priority whatsoever, but that's what will happen.
Actually, now that I see one, it doesn't have to